We just began the month of Elul. Let's review historically what the month of Elul means to the Jewish people. But before we do that, let's introduce it with a few concepts. And being that this is going to involve a little bit of Hasidut, it's very fitting that you're the one that asked the question. Hasidim stress that the days that we celebrate are not just days when something happened in our history, but they are days where we were able to affect the forces, the worlds above, and whatever light we were able to discover at that time is more easily accessible whenever that point comes on the calendar. So when we celebrate Purim, it's not just that on Purim we were able to overcome Amalek, but we say every year, if a person is going to have a court case, he should know that he stands a better chance, as far as heavens goes, in the month of Adar. And when we say Al HaNisim, be it by Hanukkah or by Purim, we say by Yamim Ahim Bazman Hazeh, in those days, in this time. And the fact that it's this time is important. It's this time which we were able to have this light revealed, and it's in this time when this light has potential again. The Avnei Nezer, if I'm not mistaken, writes that Pesach by night, God did us the favor of revealing to us that He is our Father, of going beyond the call of duty, so to speak, and going against what all the angels in heaven said. And God said, they are my sons, even though you see no difference between these idol worshippers and these idol worshippers, but these are my children, and I'm going to take them out of Egypt. And there's limitless giving from heaven on the night of Pesach. And so when we sit at the Seder, we have to value every word we say, because if we think and we pose a request of heavens on this night, so it's not just 2,000 plus years ago that, now sorry, 3,000 years ago, 3,300 some odd years ago, that God opened the heavens and said, these are my sons, they're different, I'm going to go beyond the call of duty for them. But every year at that night, there's a revelation, there's the ability for every Jew to attain beyond what he could attain the rest of the year, beyond what his merits would allow him to attain. And after that introduction, and that perspective on the times in the Jewish calendar, let's look at this specific time, the time of the month of Elul. Let's begin before creation. The world was created on the last 6 days of the month of Elul. And on the seventh day, on the day that man was created, on the sixth day in the afternoon, so that was Rosh Hashanah. And the world really began in the month of Elul. And we know that when God wanted to create the world, initially God said, let me create the world, and the world couldn't last until God said, I have to have rachamim, I have to have mercy, man is going to sin, and I have to be merciful with him, and only then can I create the world. So we know that the month of Elul is a month that introduced rachamim to the world, before the world was created, at the very beginning of creation. Let's move forward. 2,449 years. The Jews are wandering through the desert, and they've left Egypt in the year 2448. And towards the end of the year 2448, they sin with the golden calf. Moshe spent 40 days up in heavens from the 6th of Sivan, from the time God said the Ten Commandments, till Shiva Asar Betamuz. And Moshe comes down and he sees us serving the golden calf, bashes the luchos, smashes the calf, gives everyone to drink of the water, a lot of people die, goes back up to heaven, and God's upset. We've sinned. We're only 40 days away from the great revelation at Sinai, where we all saw prophecy, and here we're serving a golden calf. So, first 40 days, Moshe's begging, don't destroy them. They're your people. And Moshe tries every plea and every argument, and he's praying, and he spends from Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, we have another 13 days in Tammuz, and another 27 days in, we have another 27 days in Av. He spends up in heaven, and then he comes down, and then he goes back up again in the beginning of the month of Elul. And the Jews say, this time we don't want to mess up. So every day we're going to blow shofar and we're going to count together. And they start a count which will culminate at the 40 days. It's going to culminate with Yom Kippur. And when Moshe comes down, he's coming down after he's prayed for us not to be destroyed. And when he goes back up, in the beginning of that month of Elul, he finds God appeased. And God's happy. And God's willing to accept the Jewish people back. And from that time on, these 40 days, starting with the beginning of the month of Elul and culminating with Yom Kippur, are days where God says, I'll take you back. And it's important for us to have this period because we're coming towards the end of the year. There are two critical points. There's the beginning and there's the end. When we discuss gematrias, when we discuss Rashi Tevos, we say that one letter can represent the whole word. Either the first letter or the last letter. If you recall last night, we discussed Avner. You remember? The Ramban's disciple. The Ramban's disciple that the Torah says would be wiped out and would never be remembered. That wasn't in the first letter. That wasn't in the last letter. That was the third letter. That was the middle letter. We don't find the middle letter in Judaism having any importance. The importance is always on the first or the last. A first letter can represent everything. That's why Rav Kook writes that writing just a hey, it has holiness because it represents God's name. A yod, we know, also can represent God's name. One letter can be representative of a whole word. When we write aleph, it could represent echad, it could represent Elohim. Right? We know one letter can represent a whole word. The last letter can also be representative of the word, but the middle letter doesn't. That's why Avner, he had a past, he had a beginning, and he had a future in the world to come. It was just in this world that he messed up. So that's why when the Torah writes, Amalti afehem ashbita me'enosh zicham, I'll wipe them out, it's only the middle letter that describes Avner. Because it's only in this world that he messed up. He had the source, he still was connected to Avram, and he had the future, he still was connected to the world to come. But coming back to here, we're approaching the end of the year, and God gave us a great favor, that we end the year with a period of rachamim, a period of mercy, a period where God says, come back. And we begin the year with 10 days, about which we read on every fast day, the prophet Isaiah Yeshaya said, Dirshu Hashem behim matze'o kira'u v'yoto karov. Seek out God when He makes Himself available. Try to get called to Him when He's close to you. When is that, our sages said? That's these 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The last 10 days of these 40. We begin the year with a period where God says, I'm close to you. What do you want? I'm here. You want to come back? Come back. So we take this chunk of 40 days and we take advantage of them. God isn't saying, I'm standing over you with a stick, I'm going to beat you up if you don't repent. God's saying, look, a new year is about to begin and you're going to be judged. An intelligent person towards the end, towards judgment day, he prepares himself. He prepares himself whatever he has to do. I used to have a day camp. A day camp. So I took the kids on a trip and I used to make a few $1,000 on the day camp. Not what you could afford to buy a fancy car with, but every year just before the camp, I'd buy a car for a few $100s and then sell it after the camp for about the same price. It doesn't depreciate when you buy a car for $300. It's got nowhere to go in depreciation. So I bought a car for maybe $200, a real cheap car, and I had the day camp, and I took him on a trip once, and suddenly a police car is following us, and his lights are flashing, and he pulls me over to the side. And he walks over and he just stands there looking at me. And he starts talking to me and he says, after we talk for a minute, he says, so you're not drunk? I say, no. So he says, why are you driving like that? I said, what did I do wrong? He said, your car didn't stay straight for a second. I was sure you were drunk the way you were driving. I said, I don't know. The steering wheel was straight. I wasn't switching lanes. He said, yeah, within your lane. You kept on swerving. He looks at the tires. He says, your tires are bald. Where'd you get such old tires from? You have to change your tires. I'm giving you a ticket. If you come to the judge, tell him that I said that if you change the tires, he should forgo the ticket. But I want to ensure that you don't continue driving with such bald tires. So I'm giving you a ticket for driving around with bald tires. And when you come to the judge, if you bring him a receipt that he changed the tires, so tell him I said that you'll do away with the ticket. So the camp was over a week later, and I sold the car. And instead of bringing the judge the receipt about the tires, I came before the judge, and I said, Your Honor, I bought a lemon. I bought a very bad car. Here you have the receipt. I just sold it. And the judge looks at the receipt, and he sees I sold it for like $250. And I show him, I said, look, I bought this car for $200. So he tells me, that's not bad. You made $50 profit. So I said, well, if you give me this ticket, I didn't make any profit. So the judge, I said, okay, just pay me the processing fee and go home. But what was the point? I knew before I'm coming to the judge, I have to have a receipt. I have to show him I've done something. I have to either show him I changed the tires, or I said, I'll do one better. I'll show him I sold the car. So when we're coming on Rosh Hashanah, we have to show the judge we've done something. We have tickets, right? We've been driving around with both tires and who knows what. The judge is going to look and he's going to say, hey, you got a ticket here. You did A, B, C, D. We could walk in and say, yeah, I know, but. Or we could walk in and bring receipts. We could walk in and say, Your Honor, I know, I was driving around with both tires. I didn't realize it. Fine. But once it was brought to my attention, I took the last 30 days to take care of it. I have receipts. Look at what I've done to take care of it.
Can you make a profit?
And then hopefully you make a profit. So what we're doing in these days in preparation, in the month of Elul, what we're doing is we're preparing for that judgment day. It's not that someone's standing with a stick, it's that we're cognizant of the fact that we have tickets. And at some point, we are going to be taken to task. Now, on every day, we have to do tshuva. This isn't simply on these days. But on these days, as we're approaching judgment day, it's wiser, and we have special heavenly assistance that will be successful on these days. And on that point, I want us to continue a little bit further. No problem. Sleep well. Laila tov. The Gemara says that when Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was lying on his deathbed, his students came before him and said, Rebbe, bless us. And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said, may it be the will of Hashem that you fear God as much as you fear your fellow man. And the students looked at him and they said, that's it? And he answered them, halvai. If only you do that, look, the way a person behaves, and these were his students, you're talking about Tanoim. When he's about to sin, he says, my friend shouldn't see me. He's not concerned about God seeing him. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's students, who were on a very high level, they were Tanoim, he blesses them that they should attain the level that they should fear God as much as they fear their fellow men. Now let's move over to halacha that we're all familiar with. The halacha says, the Torah says, that if a person steals something in broad daylight, he comes with a gun and says, give me your watch, give me your wallet. If he's caught, he has to pay back what he's stolen. What happens if he comes in the dark of night and he steals something? He's a ganav, he's not a gazlan. So then he has to pay double when he's caught. Why? So our sages say, because the ganav is more scared of mankind than he is of God. The gazlan says, I'm not scared of anyone. He's equated everyone. But the ganav says, I'm more scared of mankind than of God. If someone would walk up to you and say, you know, I have a problem. I've been stealing for the last 30 years. What would you say? You'd say, okay, let's work to rehabilitate you. Let's think how you could get to be like everyone else. You wouldn't tell him, let's see how we can get you to the level of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's students. What are we expecting of this ganav? Why is the Torah making him pay double? Because the Torah is telling the ganav, hey buddy, we have great expectations for you. You, the thief, you can be bigger than Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's Talmidim. Not only can be, you should be. One of the things that can happen when we start looking at our past is that we feel like it defines our future. And we have to know that the Torah teaches us that we all have a future. We discussed at the end of last semester that there's a halacha that ordinarily the Torah says v'chai ben. This is a living Torah, you gotta live. If a person has to desecrate Shabbos to get to the hospital, otherwise he'll die, so you desecrate Shabbos, he gets to the hospital. If a person has to eat non-kosher food and that's what's gonna keep him alive, so he eats non-kosher food. We say every mitzvah we forego in order to save someone's life. A person has to remain alive, except for three. One, Kilua Hayot, Shvichut Tamim, right? Kilua Hayot, Shvichut Tamim, and Avodah Zarah. Now, they all have sources except for one. The Torah says that if someone is threatened, either kill someone or you will die, so then he has to give up his life rather than kill someone, and that it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah. The Gemara says, how do we know this halacha? It's logic. It's obvious. Why is your blood any redder than his? Really? That's the way it works? And we discussed last semester that means that if I walk into the Chafetz Chaim and I say, Mr. Chafetz Chaim, I have a problem. For the last 40 years of my life, I've been stealing, eating non-kosher, not keeping Shabbos, not keeping Yom Kippur, not keeping anything, and I don't want to change. And it looks like this is where I'm headed. This is the life I've led, and this is I don't even want to change. And then a person walks in the middle of this meeting and puts a gun to the Chafetz Chaim's head and says, kill him or you die. So the Chafetz Chaim has to agree to die rather than kill the other person. Why? Chafetz Chaim's got an important job to do in this world. He's the Chafetz Chaim. He's one of the greatest rabbis we've had in the last century. Nonetheless, the Torah says, no. This man that's telling you that he's been sinful his whole life, he's got at least the same potential as you, Chafetz Chaim. He hasn't fulfilled that potential, but tomorrow's going to be different. When we were toilet training my son, so he reached a point where all day he could be dry, but at night he couldn't be dry. So every night we put on a diaper. And he knew that if he'd get up in the morning and he'd be dry, so then he'd get chocolate chips and a sticker and he'd get a prize. So he was always very excited. Every night we'd remind him, tomorrow morning, if you're dry, we'll cook the chips, you'll get a sticker. And every night he'd say, yeah, tomorrow I'm going to be dry. And every morning he'd come and he'd say, tomorrow I'll be dry. I'm not sure. Okay. When we upped the ante, he had control. But at night, he'd forget it. He'd forego it. And at some age, they do gain control. You're right. There's an age where they cannot control, and then there's an age where they can. And they just have to start learning to be conscious of it. But I always marveled. This went on for a few months. And at some point, you get tired. You're spending hundreds of shekels on diapers. And come on. Hey, stay dry. Why am I spending this money? It's a chaval. But I always marveled how he'd look at me with a smile and say, tomorrow I'll be dry. This is after for weeks he hadn't been dry. Every morning, tomorrow. Yeah, he's got it right. We got it wrong. The Torah teaches us that every morning we have to get up and think today is going to be better than all the days in the past. There's no such thing as a person waking up and saying, yeah, but the last 40 years I've been this way. No. The Torah says you cannot wake up in the morning and say, I've been this way the last 40 years. The past cannot define the future. And that is why we say it's logic. There's no pasuk that teaches us this halacha. It's logic that there is no Jew that is more valuable than another Jew. You have two men standing there, and one has been sinful his whole life, and one has been pious his whole life. We say, yeah, the sinful one can be much more pious tomorrow. He can be. It's up to him, and we believe in him. We believe in him that he will be. One of our mistakes is that one of the major mistakes we have is that we lose self-esteem, we lose self-worth. We're not talking about gaiva now, we're talking about self-worth. What am I worth? A person has to know that he's worth a lot. A child once came before the Satmar Rebbe, and the Satmar Rebbe's always give you a fruit, you make a blessing, you eat the fruit. So the Rebbe gave the child a fruit, and he asked him, do you know what a bracha is? So the child said, yeah, I'm thanking God for the fruit. So Satmar Rebbe said, that's very nice. Let me tell you what a bracha is. Up in heaven, God sitting, and all the greatest tzaddikim are around him and they're singing praise. David is there singing Tehillim. Moshe Rabbeinu is there. All the greatest tzaddikim of all time are standing there praising God. And in the middle of all this, suddenly God says, wait, wait. God bangs on the table and says, quiet, quiet. There's a child. He's making a blessing. I got to hear it. Listen. That's what a bracha is. Rav Zelig Pliskin in his book, he writes that when we're faced with a challenge, we should think that we're an Olympian. We're standing and we're about to finish the greatest feat that's going to get us the gold medal, and the crowd of 10,000 people is going to jump to their feet and give us a standing ovation. When a person thinks that, okay. It's not just in the imagination. We have to realize that that's where we're holding. The world is resting on our shoulders, so to speak. We have the potential and the responsibility to be great. The Netziv was very skilled in his hands. He wanted to be a carpenter. The Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, he said the only reason he didn't become a carpenter was because he figured when I get to heaven, God's going to pull out a manuscript and say, you see this? You see this work? It's signed with your name. You didn't do it in this lifetime. When we're going to get up to heaven, God's going to tell us, you see all these manuscripts you could have written? God's going to look at us and say, this is your potential. This was your potential, and God's going to play before us where we could have been. Then Ziv said, I really wanted to be a carpenter. But I knew that all these manuscripts I've written, because I wasn't a carpenter, if I'd have been a carpenter, God would have taken them out and said, hey, why didn't you write these? So instead of being a carpenter, I went to write those. Every Jew has a portion in Torah that no one else can acquire but him. The book of Tehillim begins, Ashrei Ha'ish, praised is the person, Asher lo halach ba'atzat chata'im, that did not go with the advice of the sinners, u'moshav leitzim lo yashav tzat chata'im, u'vder chashim lo amad, and did not stand in the path of the wicked, u'moshav leitzim lo yashav, and did not sit among the jokers. Ki im, but rather betorat Hashem chefzo. He seeks out God's Torah. Notice, the Tehillim begins with a description of a man who is praiseworthy. He doesn't go with the wicked. He seeks out God's Torah. And then, uvetorato, and in his Torah, yehege yomam v'layla. He thinks day and night. When we approach the Torah, it's external. It's God's work. I'm learning Torah. Once we start working at it, we each have the ability to see new things in the Torah that no one else saw, no one else can see. And then it becomes our Torah. Torato. It goes from being Torat Hashem, God's Torah, to our Torah. And each of us has to know when we approach Elo that we can't sit and delve on the past. We have to fix the past. We have to take a certain amount of time, look at the past, and think how to fix it. But we have to look forward. What's more important than looking back is looking forward. We have to remember that our past doesn't define our future. Now we're defining our future. When I was a child, the Rebbe told us a story similar to my child when he was Torah training. And this story always was the story that stayed with me. He said that Rav Itzela, when he'd go to sleep at night, he'd ask himself, he'd sit and start reviewing the day. What did I do today? And he'd start saying, okay, I didn't live up to what I should have and this and that. And then he'd start rebuking himself. He'd say, Yitzhak, what's going to be with you? What's going to be with you? And then he'd say, tomorrow's going to be better. And then he'd stop and he'd say, yeah, but yesterday you also said tomorrow would be better. And he'd think. And he'd say, but tomorrow's really going to be better. And then he'd go to sleep. So every night he'd say, yeah, but tomorrow's really going to be better. And that's been my motto in life. I always think tomorrow's really going to be better. And I ever since I was a child, and I think it's an important motto. I think it's a person always has to remember the Rambam. The Rambam says we each have potential to be Moshe Rabbeinu. Every single one of us. It's even brought in Halacha. Really, a child is allowed to drink milk from a non-Jewish woman, but we say better he shouldn't, because Moshe Rabbeinu was able to talk to God because he had never tasted something that was impure. When the Egyptian women wanted to nurse him, even as a baby, he didn't want it. And as such, he was able to talk to God. He was able to attain that level. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that a person should try not to feed his child things that are impure. He should try not to give him to a non-Jewish wet nurse, because the non-Jewish woman, she eats non-kosher food, and then it enters her milk, and the non-kosher food is not good for the child. So what does that teach us? That means that when we have a baby, we have to think that baby potentially can be Moshe Rabbeinu in halacha. It's not just in ideology, also in halacha. That's the approach we're supposed to have to our children. Each and every one might be Moshe Rabbeinu. If there was one Moshe Rabbeinu, but maybe he can get there. He can. And each of us has to think that way about ourselves. And when we think about the new year, on the one hand, we have to think of realistic goals, but on the other hand, we have to think, well, matai, our sages taught us, we have to ask ourselves, matai yagil masai masai avotai. Every person has to ask himself, when will my actions meet my forefathers' actions? Going back to Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. The person always has to think, when am I going to do things as great as that? And we each have the potential and the responsibility to do it. So when we enter this month of Elo, on the one hand, we have to fix the past, but we can't wallow in the past. We have to be focused forward and jump forward and remember our potential and not have the past drag us down, but rather give us the strength to look forward and build from there. We also mentioned last semester the letter that Rav Huttner got from a disciple who told him, I once had great aspirations, I thought I'd be great in learning Torah, and now my Yetzer Hara has been getting the better of me, and I've had one downfall after the other, and I see I'm never going to amount to much. And Rav Huttner writes him back, he says, when God created the world, so it says that God created the world, and he looked and he said, V'inei tov me'od, everything was very good. And Chazal taught us that tov, what was good about the world? That's the fact that there was a Yetzer Tov. There was a good inclination within mankind. And what was Tov Me'od, very good? That was the fact that there was a Yetzer Hara, that there was a bad inclination within mankind. God injected mankind with this spice, with the inclination to do what is wrong. And that's what's very good about the world. So Rav Huttner tells him, he says, if you would have written me a letter saying how you're being successful in this and that, that would have been a good letter. But now that you're writing me a letter in which you're describing how you've had this failing and that failing and you've had this challenge and that challenge, so you're describing your Yetzer Hara, that's Tov Mo'od. You sent me a very good letter. That means you're recognizing your downfalls, you're recognizing your hardships. Now from there you have to build forward. We have to remember that the Yetzer Hara is not something bad. It's an inclination to do bad, but it's also the spice that's going to move us forward in this world. It's an important spice. The Torah teaches us, God says, I created the Yetzer Hara, barati lo Torah tavlin. I created the spice that will modify it, that's the Torah. It doesn't say, I created the surgeon that will uproot it from your heart, called the Torah. Because the Yetzer Hara is supposed to be in our heart. The Yetzer Hara is positive. But we just need the right spice. We need the Torah to guide it. Everyone has a Yetzer Hara, and everyone has their ups and their downs. Rav Huttner writes that one of the problems in our generation are the biographies. He writes this 50 years ago. He says, when you read a biography about the Chafetz Chaim, so you think the Chafetz Chaim, he always spoke purely, he never said Lashon Hara, he was all highs. And they don't tell you in the biography how many lows the Chafetz Chaim had. They don't tell you how many times he had to contend with his Yetzer Hara, and he failed. And he did fail. There's no such thing as a person that didn't fail. Everyone has failings. The Chafetz Chaim failed. If he wouldn't have failed, he wouldn't have succeeded. Chazal taught us, "Ein adam omed al divrei Torah elein ken nichshal bem." A person cannot attain Torah unless he stumbled in Torah. Meaning, anyone you see that made it anywhere in Torah has had fallings. Some big fallings and some bigger fallings. But if they haven't had bigger fallings, they haven't attained Torah. In yeshivas, they discuss a mashber, a time when a person is like, he's breached, he's broken down in his learning. And when we describe how a woman gives birth, we say she sits on the mashbir. Mashbir was like a birthing stone. It was a stone which had a breach in the middle, and the woman would put one leg on one side, one leg on the other side, and in the middle the baby would come out. Whenever you want to deliver something big, it's got to be with a mashbir, with a breach. That's where life comes to the world. And the same thing, our growth. When we think about our growth, we can't think that our past, our fallings, or where we're dissatisfied with ourselves is our limitation. No, that's our potential for growth. That's the potential that's going to move us forward. So when we approach Elo, we have to approach Elo with truthfulness, thinking about what we have to fix, and thinking how we're going to fix it. And at the same time, we have to be positive and look forward, and look how to build, and also know our strong points. And remember that Sheva Yipol Tzadik Vakam. Sheva in Tanakh can either mean seven, or it's an allusion to many. It's like saying a million times. Tzadik is one who falls many times and keeps getting back up. If he didn't fall, he's not a tzadik. Tzadik is only someone who falls and gets back up. There's no one who didn't fall. Everyone fell. If they got somewhere, they fell. So that's, those were a few words I wanted us to discuss about Elul. Yeah. When we learn Daniel, we'll discuss that.
But the big question is, because reading this paragraph, what downfall could Solomon could possibly have that instead of learning 16 daf a day, he was only able to learn 55?
Person came to the Gra and said to him, you know, one of his students said, if I were like you, if I had your Yetzer Hara, I'd also learn as much as you do. But you know how much the Yetzer Hara gets at me? I wake up in the morning, I feel like doing 100 improper things. You wake up in the morning, you think, will I learn 10 Daf Gemara today or 20 Daf Gemara today? So Yetzer Hara pushes you down to 10. And the Gra answered him, he said, if you had my Yetzer Hara, you wouldn't even keep Shabbos. It's incorrect to think that a great person doesn't have a great Yetzirah even on small things. A great person is going to have Yetzirah on everything that a smaller person has, plus. He might have more tools to deal with him. He might have more experience dealing with him. But that doesn't mean he doesn't have a Yetzirah. And I don't know what each person's downfall was, but there's no such thing as someone who made it up that didn't have many, many downs. The problem with the biographies is that they don't tell you that. There was a biography that came out a few years ago that did tell you that, and they automatically ostracized the book and said all kinds of not nice things about its author. But in truth, that's an important thing. It's important to know that people had ups and downs. And unfortunately, biographies don't do that. The flip side of that is what Rav Avram Shapiro says, and he should have a refuah shleima. He's not well right now. He's on a breathing machine. He's getting oxygen, so he should have a speedy recovery. He says that in our generation, the way to learn Musar is by reading biographies. He says when you read about the positive behavior of the Gdolim, then you learn how a person's supposed to behave. He says that's the way a person learns Musal today. So that's the flip side of that. I know that Rav Nevinsal, when he takes a break from his learning, he reads biographies. That's what his students told me.
Are you going to give Tanish here?
We'll see. I don't know. So.